Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
So two hat tricks. That's a thing.
Yeah, the last time that happened, we were 9, Zach.
I'll take it. That's good, especially against Boston.
Yeah.
Especially against Boston. That feels good.
No, it felt really good. Couldn't have happened to a better group of guys. Good for the Sabres getting a 7-2 win over the lovely Boston Bruins last night.
Tage Thompson, JJ Paterka, both with hat tricks. And then the 7th goal, as it was a 7-2 win, scored by Zach Benson.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I was going to say Jack Quinn, but Benson got the tip on it.
Yep, Quinn and Cousins, the sisters. Yeah. Good for them.
12 seconds to go on that last goal, too.
Yeah.
So that's just like rubbing salt in the wound. I love those types of goals. Good win. I mean, play like that every night. Let's keep on going.
We'll give a few minutes here to the Sabres because, again, last night, really cool win. You mentioned it. You know, we were 9 the last time the Sabres had two guys score a hat-trick in the
same
game.
And before that, it was 06.
Mm-hmm.
Joe brought it up. It was Pominville and Hesch in 06. So last time it happened in 08 was Drew Stafford and Derek Roy in a 10-1 win. When I saw that Sabres PR tweeted that out, I immediately retweeted it with the Matt Damon from Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
Where he like ages.
Yep.
Man, that feels like forever ago. It feels, because it kind of was. I mean, it's almost 20 years ago now, which is also kind of weird to think about. I mean, it's 17 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I watched a lot of that game, and the whole time I'm thinking, and me and you have talked about this a little bit off air. I don't think we've mentioned it on air. The more I'm watching it, the more I'm just like, go get Pettersson.
Yeah.
Do something.
Please.
Do something. There's clearly some good players on this core. I know I've said kind of the opposite because I was frustrated with this team. There are some good guys on this team that you can build around. I'm okay getting rid of some of these prospects. I'm prospect fatigued. I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
Go get a guy like Elias Pettersson, who is clearly a number one center. I from what I've seen, Tage has been playing on the wing for quite a bit now. So that even now is more of a push forward to, go get a number one center. Tage is no longer that, or currently is not that.
Well, and to be fair, too, when he's not playing center, he's been better. So it's like, I'm not going to sit here and say, like, oh, you shouldn't have him on the wing, because he's actually scoring pretty decent at a pretty decent pace when he's on the wing.
Mm-hmm.
He has 23 goals on the season now, and I think Paul said earlier with Jeremy and Joe that he's on a 46-goal pace. That's awesome. Like, obviously you need more than just that, but that alone, that's one of your guys that you signed to a long-term deal returning to what he used to put out. And that's what you need. That's what you've needed since that season, and you haven't gotten it. But now here you are. You finally seem to have unlocked what he needs, but now you need a center to go with him. Because, yes, Yuri Kulik has been awesome. I don't think he's nearly ready to be a number one center in the NHL.
No, and that's how you break his development again.
Right, because that's what you did.
Again for him, but again just in general.
Because that's what you did to Casey Mittelstadt. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, sure, he's... Actually, I don't really know if he's figuring it out in Colorado, because it's been not a great season for him so far. But
started off fun for him.
Yeah, but my point is you can't do that again. Like, you can't make the same mistake, so you have to try to get somebody that will, you know, just not be a placeholder, but, like, Pettersson would come in and be your number one center for the next 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
He's signed until 2032.
26 right now through 43 games played, 31 points, 11 goals. A little bit of a down year for him.
On a bad Vancouver team, where the vibes are all the way off.
Yeah, and there's a reason why we're talking about a Pettersson trade, even though he's inarguably a cornerstone piece for them, or has been.
The talk is that him and JT Miller, one of their other top players a few years ago, they're having problems with each other in the locker room, and it's causing other problems in the locker room with other players. So it's like there's a whole mess going on in Vancouver, a lot like what happened, well, not necessarily a lot like it, but in terms of the size of the mess, it's a lot like what happened to the Sabres a few years ago. It's a different kind of mess because the players are fighting each other, whereas, you know, when everything happened with Jack Eichel and everything like that, it was completely different. It was more the franchise and the player were disagreeing rather than the players in the locker room. But, Vancouver feels like they need a hard reset. The Sabres really need a big move. It just, it feels like it's right there. And everyone's saying it's right there. What is the holdup? Is it something on Vancouver's side? Is it something on the Sabres side? Is it someone else is offering something and the Sabres are trying to counter? Like, I need this trade to happen. It really needs to happen.
I think a lot of us need it, and I know I'm certainly among this too. I need it to feel something. I need it to feel like the lights are still on in the organization, that it's not just punch in, punch out, go to work, sit in an office, make some phone calls, and go home.
Yeah,
I need to know that the lights are still on there. I think partially a lot of it, too, is how the Bills season ended. You lost again to Kansas City. In part, I think Kansas City is just flat out a better team than you. I think they wait now for the playoffs to really unleash themselves. And so, yeah, for the other Buffalo team, I'd like to know that there is actually attempts to make a better franchise. In a move for Pettersson, yes, you may have to give up Bo Byram or Owen Power and then probably someone like Dylan Cousins to get it done, probably. And you may have to give up a little bit more. But at least it proves that they're willing to do something, that someone like in Kevin Adams' position is willing to do something that may cost him his job, but ultimately his inaction probably will cost it anyways. And if it works, that's the move.
Right. And because that's the thing here is like moves in the past that we've talked about are not necessarily like make a move to make a move. You need to do something. This is a move that alters a franchise.
Yeah.
This is a move that changes the course of where you're going for the next 5 years. If you go out and get Elias Pettersson, who scored 100 points 2 years ago and has been considered in some seasons a Selke candidate for being such a good defensive forward, who also has insane chemistry with Rasmus Dahlin from their time on the Swedish national team. There's all sorts of parallels here for this player to what the Sabres need.
Yep.
He's basically Jack Eichel, just without the internal strife or any of the baggage that you had with him. I mean, granted, he is coming from an awful situation, so you can't, you know, replicate that because he's going to want to leave even faster. But if I was Kevin Adams, I would be doing everything in my power to make this trade happen. And I feel like he is because of the way that people are talking about how close the Sabres are.
It does help that, you know, people like Elliot Friedman or
Darren Dreger,
yeah. Even Chad DeMinicis locally here with Expected Buffalo. It does help hearing all that going on. I will say, though, me personally, just how negative I have been on the Sabres, just feelings. You've heard me say it off air, too. Like, I kind of scoff at it. I'm like, cool, yeah, it's not going to happen.
Right. I won't believe it until it does.
Yeah. But a performance like last night at least kind of like gave me a bit of a pulse of like, oh, but maybe what if it did?
Right. And also,
last night was the first time I was like getting excited about the prospect, because up to that point, I truly believed it was never going to happen.
And if nothing else, this trade definitely sparks that locker room. Because a month ago, you had the owner show up in Montreal saying the solution's in the room. And now you're talking about trading for a franchise center. Like, there's definitely something going on there in terms of the players seeing what's happening. The players hear rumors. They read Twitter. They do all sorts of stuff like that. I mean, it's something that can really spark a room. And I don't think, you know, that's enough. I do think the trade has to happen regardless. But in the meantime, it's nice to see the players stepping up. It's nice to see that.
It's nice to see that. And to your point, too, this is he's got this locked up till
2032.
Yeah, so he's in his 30s.
Yeah.
You're going to have him for a number of years. That seems to be an issue that Adams ran into this offseason of not trading for guys, is because he wanted them long term. Pettersson figures this out. And while it may not push for the playoffs this year kind of feels dead in that sense, it can push into the offseason. You will have shown some semblance of credibility to the rest of the league. Pettersson, Thompson, Dahlin, the upswing of guys like Kulik. All of a sudden, there is sort of this foundational pieces for free agents to look at and go, I wouldn't mind that.
And there's also,
I would not mind going there.
You also, you know, you brought up Chad DeDominicis on Expected Buffalo talking about it in his most recent podcast episode. Also with that, he talks about another trade the Sabres could potentially make in with Pittsburgh for Marcus Pettersson, not to be confused with Elias Pettersson.
So fun.
Yeah, and then there's another Elias. There's two Vancouver Elias Petterssons on Vancouver. So, hey, let's just get both of them just to make sure we get the right one.
We got to be better about naming people.
You also have Marcus Pettersson, who is in Pittsburgh as a left-shot defenseman in the final year of his contract. It's a player that apparently, according to Chad, the Sabres have really had their eye on. They talked to Pittsburgh about him. Pittsburgh wants a prospect in return. So there is stuff there, but the thing with Marcus Pettersson is he's in the last year of his contract. Mm. So he's a guy where, let's say you have to trade a Bowen Byram to get Elias Pettersson, he's a guy that comes right in and replaces him, at least for this season. Which, that right there, too, kind of shows you the growth of a GM. The foresight to say, I'm not just going to make this big trade if I don't have something to, you know,
fall back on
and mm-hmm. make sure I, well, not necessarily fall back on, but make sure I have my defense position covered. Because mm-hmm. if you do trade Bowen Byram, that's a big piece. Yeah. He is a good, really good defenseman. On most teams that don't have two number one overall pick defensemen on them, he would be a number one defenseman. He's good enough for that. He's a fourth overall pick. He has been awesome for the Sabres in like the almost year they've had him. But he also needs a contract this offseason. And I don't think I don't really know if the Sabres should put that much money into another defenseman because he's going to want a big deal. And Vancouver is a team that might need somebody like that, which if that's the price, I would say do it every single day of the week. Because again, Elias Pettersson is a franchise-changing center.
Still got a few months, though, before the trade deadline.
Yeah.
Which,
but we already had a big trade.
We already had a big trade. Rantanen, he goes to Carolina.
Still that was so weird.
Huge. That's my fear, though, is we're going to have these talks all the way to March 7th.
And nothing. No, I don't think so.
You think if it's going to happen,
because
it'll happen before that.
Like it sounds like how like Vancouver wants this badly, and if it sounds like they want it bad enough to do it before the Four Nations face-off, a lot of the trades are or a lot of the teams sound like they're almost using that as like a pre-trade deadline
because they'll have enough time to kind of integrate the player. Mm-hmm. It won't be a rushed kind of process.
That is like there's a I think week and a half break for that tournament.
There's a little bit of a break there. And that's
Wednesday, February 12th mm-hmm, is when it starts, and it goes to February 20th. So you have 8 days at least of no NHL games to play. If teams want to get something done, it's either going to be right before that or even during that. I think that makes the most sense for any team looking to make a trade is to do it right before it or during that tournament.
It's going to be interesting to keep an eye on. I mean, it might be one of the first times in a long time the Sabres are somewhat interesting, especially in a big kind of trade talk.
Mm-hmm.
And now that Carolina's out due to them getting Rantanen, it's starting
There's
to feel legitimate.
There's other teams still involved. I mean,
of course.
The Rangers are – I think the Rangers are another one.
But every report from the big guys you've brought them up, guys like Drager and Friedman, the Sabres seem to be in pole position.
Yeah, and it sounds like they have been since day one.
Yeah.
Another thing that's interesting, too, is it's an organizational thing. There's no worry about money or bonuses or salary or anything like that. That's all green lit. Like, you just go get the guy. So.
Get it done.
Get it across the finish line for once.
Well, because like, me and you talked about it off air, but it is one of those, like, I don't care if you made phone calls. I don't care mm-hmm. how close it was.
Right.
I need it done.
Yeah, I've heard how close everything was over the past however many years.
You're
I need something to happen.
Yeah, you're a GM who has struggled to do this. Mm-hmm. And honestly, some of the moments that you've stepped in the mud have been you saying, I was on the phones. You know, no one talks to more GMs than me or you know, however it was put. You got to get it done. Got to get it done. This is a franchise that it barely has a pulse.
Right. And look, honestly, I obviously want to get it done, but just the fact that they are big swinging like this, that is a really good sign, to be honest. Because in some seasons, we've seen, regardless of GM, we've seen it get to this point of the year of like, well, playoffs are a real long shot, and we don't want to make any moves that'll like, you know, rock the boat in the middle of the season. So we're just going to wait to the offseason. And then you miss out on all of those trade opportunities until the offseason.
When
so
in reality, the Sabres are a team that like should desperately be trying to rock the boat.
So it's a good sign to see, too, that they're willing to make moves in season, even if the season's out the window. Because, again, this is a move that does not necessarily – I mean, it'll affect this season for sure if that happens. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't affect just this year. It affects years down the road because Pettersson is locked up for seven more years.
Yep. It's the exact move Kevin Adams has wanted to make. It seems to fit all of the boxes for him. 803-0550, the number to call. If you want to jump in on the Sabres 7-2 win, the Elias Pettersson trade talks, obviously would love to talk about those. But, Josh, it's draft season, baby.
Is it?
I have already begun watching just little clips here and there.
It's January.
At the Senior Bowl. Oh, man.
Zach, it's January.
Oh, it doesn't matter. Does not matter.
By the way, hasn't January felt like 3 months in one? Is that just because of the Bills games?
It's been a slow-moving month.
It really has.
Like, I mean, we were talking when we came in here. I was, you know, this week reading Senior Bowl previews. And in my head, I'm reading them and I'm going, guys, what are you doing? Like, it's like 3-4 weeks away. And then I'm like, wait a second. Practice starts tomorrow. And it's been playing catch-up. The season only ended a week later than last year.
Mm-hmm.
It feels way different.
Yeah.
I think part of it was because we were waiting 3, 4, 5 weeks kind of just for the playoffs to begin. You kind of knew where you were going to be
really, at. We've really been waiting since November.
Yeah, and so then it's draft season really took a back seat where, I mean, it's years ago now. It used to start in November, though, where it's like, all right, who are the quarterbacks? Who are the big guys? Who's a top 15 player? Who are we looking at? Like, you knew what it was going to be. Now it's a little bit different, but I will tell you, Josh, looking at some of these guys, Ryan Fowler of the Draft Network, Field Yates, of course, like some of these big draft guys that we've had on the station or just nationally, talking about how good this defensive tackle class is.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. The Bills have a desperate need on the defensive line, and they've got 3 picks in the first 2 rounds right now. We'll see if there's any big trades for somebody like Max Crosby. I know Andrew Berry, the Browns GM, kind of kiboshed any ideas of a Myles Garrett trade. He does that now. We'll see what happens in March. But for right now, that's kind of been shut down. But I'm getting excited at like the idea of them being able to add some elite players on the defensive side, because they desperately need it. I know they spent a lot of draft capital in years past on the defensive side. It didn't necessarily work out.
None of it.
Yeah, really I was going to say, some of them way worse than others. Kyer Elam has been a real, real miss. I'd argue the biggest miss of the Bean era, where others like Greg Rousseau are just solid players that you think if you could get one other guy on his opposite side, you're going to get more out of them. And that proved pretty true in the first half of Von Miller's first year. That proved pretty accurate.
The problem with that, though, is you expected Greg Rousseau to come in and be able to do that on his own.
Yeah,
you didn't expect him to come in and have to have someone with him. Now, it's fine if you want to have someone with him. Like you said,
it's never a bad thing.
It worked great with Von Miller when he first got here before his injury and everything like that. But I think the problem is the fact that you have made these big picks in the early rounds and then nothing else. It hasn't been like you're sprinkling the picks around the draft. Like, sure, you got Benford in, what, the 5th, 6th round. Mm-hmm. That was great. But Elam was a first-round pick. Rousseau was a first-round pick. That's like you're just taking swings in the first round and then kind of moving on from there. Sure, you're adding players in the later rounds, but it's not nearly as good as when you're adding other players on offense in the later rounds. The later rounds for offense have been awesome. I mean, James Cook was in the 2nd round. Sure, that's a little early on, but still.
Khalil Shakir was a
5th rounder. Gabe Davis was a 4th rounder. Like, there's a bunch of guys on offense that have really hit as the rounds have gone on, but it hasn't really gone that way on defense except for Christian Benford. And if you want to go back that far, you could go Matt Milano, but that's what feels like ages ago.
Yeah, I mean, it is weird. Like, where do you fit like the 3rd round of that? Is that still like the because they've done incredibly well in the 3rd round with Bernard
Spencer Brown, and then you've also had Dorian Williams.
Defense.
Spencer Brown's offensive line.
Yep.
That's the thing. Like I said, you can look and find offensive players that have gone all over the place and have been key contributing members of the team. But when you look at the defense, sure, it's been balanced, but the talent has nowhere near been the same thing.
They've missed a lot in the first 2 rounds of the drafts pretty often. Just looking at the last three, Starts with Elam in the first round of 22. That's been obviously a complete mess. Bad. They kind of saved themselves by getting Benford later in that draft in the sixth round. James Cook has funny enough, that draft is maybe one of the more productive ones. Mm-hmm. 22.
Most of the players from that draft are on the team still.
James Cook hits. Terrell Bernard hits. Khalil Shakir hits. Christian Benford hits.
Spencer Brown was in that draft.
Brown is in 21.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
But then you go to 23. Dalton Kincaid, I think up to this point, has been kind of a letdown. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say an outright miss, but a letdown.
Right. Right.
From what you assumed you were getting, he was kind of pegged by the organization as, don't think of him as a tight end. He's more of just a pass catcher.
Well, everyone in the draft kind of put him into that category.
And that hasn't really been it at all. I think maybe on to that point, one of my most frustrating things with Kincaid, there's not necessarily stats to it. It's just whenever he seems to make a big play, it's the least convincing thing you've ever seen. The ball is moving. You're not really sure if he got 2 feet in. Recently this year, he had a big pass down the field. He dives, gets it. It's clearly moving. They had to rush up to get a playoff. It doesn't get challenged.
Yeah, right.
But he clearly didn't catch the ball. And then we all saw the fourth and five play. The all 22 angle makes it look way worse for Kincaid, where live you were like, maybe you didn't really have a chance. That one, he kind of half misreads it. It lands right in his belly and just, it pops right out.
I do think, though, on the whole misreading part of it, if you're Kincaid, your route is to keep going to the sideline.
Mm-hmm.
Allen is. And this isn't a detriment to Allen either, but Allen is just chucking that thing.
Yeah, he fires into a window.
He has to just kind of guess where Kincaid and even Mac Hollins as he rushes into frame too. He kind of has to guess where they are because he's got three guys about to tackle him.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Kincaid probably anticipated, well, I'm going to keep running my route. He'll probably hit me on the sideline. Uh-oh.
Hey, the ball's coming now.
The ball's coming now. I got to turn around. Like, I don't knock him for that because I think – if you watch, he turns around like as the ball's being released.
He does catch that though.
I'm not excusing that. I'm trying to say though, like I'm excusing a little bit on the route running aspect of it.
Oh, okay.
The fact that if you watch when you time up where he turns to when Allen releases it, he turns almost instantly
mm-hmm.
and realizes, uh-oh, like he's not going to be able to get it where I think he is because he has three guys in his face.
Yeah.
So we've got
Kincaid in round one of 23. Torrence has, I think, started every single game of his first 2 years of his career at mm-hmm. right guard.
He's been
good.
Like last year was, I think, better. This year had its flaws.
Yeah,
but
he's ultimately starting right guard on a very good offensive line.
Yeah,
it doesn't.
He'd
sound
be
like
a starting right guard on most offensive lines.
Yeah, I don't think we're thinking about moving past him. So he's good. No. Dorian Williams, I think, he's a very athletic outside linebacker. I think they mm-hmm. really like him, and he got him in the third round. And then this year, I think, has been slightly frustrating. Keon Coleman, where are we at with him? I think most of us kind of agree. Well, he can absolutely develop into a very serviceable player for the Bills and maybe even a guy that just stays on the roster for a number of years, even getting a second contract. I don't think any of us think he's ever going to become a number one receiver that is going to warrant having enough targets to get to like an 80, 90 catch season. I don't think that's ever going to happen. Cole Bishop. Flashes, but never really got to a point where he was your starting safety. That could be just due to Hamlin and Rapp were performing well enough that you didn't need to make the switch. But as a second-round pick, you would have liked to have seen more. Round three, Dwayne Carter. He had flashes, but we got to a point where he was inactive a lot towards the end of the year. Ray Davis is a fourth-round pick. It's not bad by any means. He had real flashes mm-hmm. at times where he looked incredibly good. Didn't see anything from Van Pran Granger. He was obviously kind of somebody you sort of thought was more they got him for future uses potentially.
Yeah. And also, like, I mean, let's say the Connor McGovern thing didn't go as planned. Right.
Right.
Then you have Van Pran Granger kind of waiting in the wings for when he's ready.
And we also know the Bills like to have a ton of offensive linemen mm-hmm. because they use guys. Alec Anderson is a sixth offensive lineman, swing tackle, swing, just everything that they use with offensive linemen, understandable. I mean, they end up taking three guys in this draft class. Eddie Ulufashio, he was more of a special teams guy at linebacker. Javon Solomon, I know a lot of us liked him, never really became too much, but he did have two sacks this year. Tylan Grable, another offensive lineman. Daquan Hardy, and then Travis Clayton. He, being their last pick, was sort of that part of that international group where we're going to start developing guys, kind of like what the Eagles did on the high end, Jordan Mailata. So they're kind of seeing that. And again, offensive linemen, they like to build them. And Aaron Cromer, as the offensive line coach, has done a wonderful job. But through these, you're looking at the top picks, though. it's, and I put it like this a few days ago, it's different levels of disappointing. Keon Coleman and Dalton Kincaid are not busts. They're not. Kyrie Elam is. Kincaid, you can argue, has been disappointing. Although his rookie year, he broke a lot of Bills' records for tight ends. But his year two, injuries or not, has been relatively disappointing. You wonder what the chemistry level is between him and Allen. And I get nervous about that because you saw by the end of his rookie contract, there was clearly an issue between Gabe Davis and Josh Allen. Not personally, but chemistry-wise.
Right.
It was, Gabe would go right when Josh is assuming he's going to go left. And there, and there was a number of interceptions last year that came off that of Gabe's one-on-one. He decides to go one way. Josh is going the other.
Right. It was very apparent. Disaster. It was very apparent that was a problem in the Philly game.
The Philly game, yes.
That absolutely. That was where it really kind of started to rear its head a little bit.
And then with Keon Coleman, it was on draft day. Because it was not draft night. They traded back in the second round. But it was on draft day. In the second round, where it was okay, you're getting a guy that most draft experts project better in the slot. You already have a slot, and he's a big slot, and you need an X guy. Oh, now you're saying he's going to be an X receiver. Okay, his separation stats are really bad. It got to the point where I was sitting there, you know, middle of the season, looking for anything to give us hope that Keon Coleman was developing into something. It never really got there. The Seattle game, I thought, was his best game. But a lot of it was more due to just he had a good game. It wasn't necessarily a sign of things to come. And the wrist injury, you could argue, maybe just stopped his development in his tracks for this year. And they kind of move forward with the running game.
It's almost like in hibernation, kind of.
Maybe it did. The Seattle game, though, was the last time and maybe the only time I felt real confidence of like, okay, he's coming along.
Was that, though, the fact that he was a matchup nightmare for, like, a Tariq Woolen? Like, was he just able to really be that bully wide receiver where he can just get up there and make catches? Because that's kind of what we all thought of him when he first came onto the scene of, like, oh, yeah, he's just going to beat guys to the ball because he's got that athletic ability to jump up and catch it. But it's not going to work against everybody. Like, imagine doing that against, like, a Marshon Lattimore.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to be able to out-muscle Marshon Lattimore. Right? Like it depends on it's obviously like how you match up, but like and you're never going to have a perfect matchup every game. But you want a receiver that can adjust to those matchups, and I don't know if Coleman can.
Yeah,
how can he adjust?
The skill set to do so.
Right.
But if you put somebody opposite him, faster, more of a separating guy, maybe stretch the field more, mm-hmm. I think then you can get a lot out of Keon Coleman.
I think that's what they wanted in Cooper, and it just didn't.
It never really materialized.
Right. It did a few times, but not really.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call if you want to jump in on the conversation we're having. The Bills' draft history in the recent years. Some absolute hits, a lot of them in 22, although some, especially at the top, less so on that. Sal Capaccio, we expect to talk to him at 11:30. We'll see, though, if something happens. We are still waiting on confirmation on when Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean will speak with the media. They may do it together. They may do it separately. They may do it on the same day. They may do it on different days. We'll see. But for right now, we're expecting to speak with Sal Capaccio in just about an hour, talk more on the NFL, what comes next for the Bills, and really everything around that. We'll also maybe get into some coaching news across the NFL. The coaching cycle's all but wrapped up. Saints, the only team now to have to hire a head coach. Zach Jones, Josh Mint here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. That is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. This is WGR.
Thompson moving tonight. He's got two. Scores! He's got three! Hat trick for Tage Thompson. Let it rain. His seventh hat trick of his career.
Dan Dunleavy on the call there. Tage Thompson, hat trick. Very nice. JJ Paterka also getting himself a hat trick. Zach Benson scoring the seventh and final goal of the night for the Sabres. 7-2 win over the Boston Bruins. They take on Nashville on Friday for Rob Ray night as well. His ceremony as he gets put into the rafters will begin at 6 o'clock, and that will be right here on WGR. If you are not attending the game, you will be able to listen to that in its entirety. Should be a wonderful night. Rob Ray will be joining Shovel the Bulldog today at 4 p.m., so do stay tuned for that as well. We were just watching, Josh, we got ESPN on here, and Mad Dog Russo, I don't really care for him, but I kind of like the idea of like top five tortured NFL fan bases. He's got Bears at 5, Jets at 4, Vikings 3, Browns 2, Bills 1. I agree with Bills. I would have Vikings at 2. We were talking a little bit in the break. you have to have some level of like serious success to be tortured. I think there is some, because look who he doesn't have on there, Detroit. And yeah. I'd also, to a certain extent, take the Jets off that for that reason. You need to be successful and not get over the hump to be tortured. Outside of that, you're just a not good franchise.
But that's the thing.
I would take the Bears off that list. You've won a Super Bowl already.
Yeah, but the thing is like, I think you look at the Bears, the Jets, and the Browns, you also have to think about organizationally, they are extremely dysfunctional.
I think that might be why we don't have the sound on here, obviously. Right. That might be why the Bears are on there. Is, yes, mm-hmm. they have won a Super Bowl, but you look at how they're run and how did that even happen?
The Jets have won a Super Bowl. Granted, I know it was
Super Bowl III, yeah.
Yeah, right. I understand that. But I look at those three teams, the Browns, the Jets, and the Bears. They're different from the Bills and the Vikings because the Bills and the Vikings are the only two teams to lose in four Super Bowls. Obviously, the Bills in four straight and everything else that's going on now with the Bills. Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on there. But with the Browns, the Jets, and the Bears, the Browns fans have quarterback jerseys that have 15 names on them.
So good. So good.
The Jets, every single year, get hyped up to something new and then immediately get let down. The Bears, it's okay, this GM's out. Now the coach and the quarterback are going to pick the new one. And now that coach is out. So now the GM and the quarterback are going to, the quarterback's out. Oh, it's a revolving door. It's been a revolving door for 20 years or more for the Bears. Like, there are so many things, so many layers to this where I get why Detroit should also be on this list. But I think it's just that they're all in the same boat in the sense of the torture is not the fact that you haven't had success. It's the fact that you haven't had success.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, you are, it's not that you had success once and you're never getting back there. It's that you've never even tasted success. You've never even come close to it. That's why I think the Browns are at two.
Yeah, the Browns, they show too, like, you've been the bridesmaid to John Elway's The Drive, you know, mm-hmm. like Ernest Byner's fumble, like,
yep.
You're right.
And again, you're drafting all of these quarterbacks that are the next big thing. Johnny Manziel, Baker Mayfield.
Tim Couch,
like, I can't even name them all because
let's go.
There's so many of them.
Brandon Whedon. Here we go, like, 28-year-old
Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, like, selling your soul to go get Watson. Yeah. That's its own level of, like,
And then having Jameis Winston be better almost instantly.
I'm just more fun.
Yeah.
Just flat out more fun.
And a lot less controversy. But, like, that's the other thing, too. Again, it goes to the ownership of these teams.
Mm-hmm.
The Bears, the Jets, and the Browns all have terrible ownership groups that can't make a decision. They can't make a right decision if it was the only decision.
I think that's why, though, I would have the Bills and Vikings at 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Is because it just feels like you just fall short. The other teams, you could argue, like, you're not really that close.
Sure.
Like, you've had moments. The Jets, the AFC Championship runs in the early 2010s with Mark Sanchez and Rex Ryan. But ultimately, like, they were getting there off of vibes and really good defensive performances. Mark Sanchez,
Darrell Revis was one of the best, if not the best, cornerback in the NFL.
Mark Sanchez was never winning a Super Bowl, and I think even Jets fans at the time were telling you that. They just wanted to make the game.
Mm-hmm.
Browns, where are we at? Just make the game. The Bears are a little bit different. They want to get back to what they were in 85.
Right.
Because 85, that kind of run in the 80s there was just so magnetic. I mean, you had such big personalities. You were genuinely different on defense than anybody else. You had so many high-profile stars. Then Walter Payton's there, of course, because your coach. Like, the Bears,
it's an iconic time period.
It's an iconic time period, and it's, you know, if you ask Bears fans, like, da Bear, like, everything.
All the SNL stuff.
All 85.
Right.
It's all 85, and I think that's a big part of it too. Is, like, they have that one year that was great. Where for the Bills and Vikings, it's constant. Of just heartbreak after heartbreak after heartbreak. Great teams that arguably should have been in the Super Bowl. Like, the Bills, you could argue at 1-2, it's not just the four Super Bowls. It's you somehow get the most physically gifted quarterback of all time in the same generation that maybe the Michael Jordan of the sport is playing in.
Mm-hmm.
And you're playing second fiddle to them.
Right after a 17-year playoff drought.
Yeah, you have the drought, you know, but all that. But then you were good right before the Super Bowls began. You were really good in the 60s.
Yeah.
And the Super Bowl start and you fall off.
Yeah.
You know, and there's even stuff too of, like, your great members of your franchise. O.J. Simpson. For all of our lives, we really couldn't look at O.J. other than the guy that maybe got away with murder, quote unquote, maybe. That's tough. I mean, that's one of your greatest franchise players of all time and you can't really talk about him. Mm-hmm. Where the Vikings, I mean, it's a little bit different. I've always seen the Vikings as the Bills NFC equivalent. Yeah. They do stuff differently, sure. But ultimately, it's cold weather. It's kind of the same fans. We all tailgate. There's a similar mindset to how we go. And really, up until the Bills got Josh Allen, they were kind of the same thing as the Vikings, where it was piecemealing quarterbacks together since Fran Tarkenton. You maybe have one or two years where it's like, oh, we've maybe got something here, and then it falls apart. The Bills kind of ran into some ownership issues. The Vikings never had that. But the Vikings, they were just always the second fiddle to whoever was great in the NFC at the time. Whether it be you go back to the 60s and 70s, you were sort of the second fiddle to the Cowboys at the time with Roger Staubach. And then you got to Super Bowls, and you were just the second fiddle to like great teams of the decade. The Steelers, the Dolphins, the Chiefs' first Super Bowl is a blowout against the Vikings. The Raiders even finally get over that hump. They get over it because of you. And it's just abysmal Super Bowl performances for them. They haven't gotten back since 76. And then from then on, it's been a heartbreaking playoff loss after heartbreaking playoff loss. You go to the conference championship in 87 against Washington. If you want to go back to 98 with Randy Moss and Randall Cunningham, you fall to a Falcons team you had no business losing to. They were a team that didn't make the playoffs the year prior, go 14-2, and I think go right back down to not making the playoffs the next year. 2009, you get Brett Favre, arguably putting up his best season ever. 33 touchdowns, 7 picks. Josh, Brett Favre threw 7 picks in a season. That's a miracle. It is a miracle.
Yeah.
And yet, what does he do in the biggest moment? Throws a terrible interception in the NFC Championship game that sends the Saints to the Super Bowl. I'm not saying you'd necessarily beat the Colts.
But you never know.
But you get there, and there's a chance.
Right.
And then look at this year, just this year now.
Yeah, they have all this regular season success. Sam Darnold revitalizes his career.
Yep, but you're second fiddle to Detroit. You maybe found something in Darnold, and then the last 2 weeks of the year, you lose the division to Detroit, and then he takes 1,000 sacks against the Rams.
And falls apart completely.
And he falls apart completely. You lose in the wild card game. 14 wins, you don't even win a playoff game.
Mm-hmm.
You maybe have something in J.J. McCarthy, but even if you asked a lot of Vikings fans, the fact that he got hurt before the season began after having glimpses in the playoffs, or sorry, in the preseason, that he was maybe going to be something, and then in the middle of this year, I think it was ultimately a cleanup job, but I'm also a J.J. McCarthy apologist, openly that. If you asked Vikings fans now, that surgery is a sign that, nope, he's never going to be the guy that we drafted. There was promise. There was the deep touchdown in the preseason. We thought we had it, and now it's gone. And even then, too, it's like our division is a buzzsaw. It's a complete and utter buzzsaw. Like, what are we supposed to do? We won 14 games, came in second. What are we supposed to do with that? They're in a tough spot. Even go back to 22. They won 13 games.
Mm-hmm.
They had like a negative point differential or whatever that was that season.
Yeah, that was the year where it was like the crazy catch by Justin Jefferson against the Bills.
Yeah.
And it was like, how are they winning games?
Yeah, they lost to Daniel Jones in the playoffs at home. there's a lot there, I think, for both Buffalo and Minnesota. I think those are the two most tortured fan bases in NFL football. Because for me, you have to know some look at Detroit right now, how their fans are reacting to their two coordinators leaving for head coaching jobs. They're acting like they've been stabbed in the back.
Yeah.
And partially they're acting like that because the last guy they lost was Don Shula when Kennedy was president. So, like, I get it. Like, it's been a while since you've experienced this.
I need to know when the first Bears game is in Detroit this coming season.
Oh, for next year? Yeah, I can't wait for that schedule.
That's going to be an insane game.
But
is Ben Johnson going to get a standing ovation?
Not how they've acted this offseason. No, that's, probably not.
Yeah.
Probably
is he going to even get a video tribute? Or are they just going to put up a graphic that says, thanks?
I think we're closer to that. I think we're closer to thanks.
It's not even just, thanks, Ben Johnson. Thanks.
Here, like, even go to 2017, too. You have the Minneapolis Miracle, Stephon Diggs, maybe his highlight of his career. And then you go to Philadelphia, lose 38-7 in the NFC Championship.
Yeah,
it's not even a contest.
Stomped on. Yeah.
Not even a contest.
Yeah.
And that's 13-win season, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they've had great success and absolutely nothing, arguably, to show for it. So I think the Bills and the Vikings are maybe the most tortured fan bases. I know we're talking on a Buffalo radio station. I'd probably put Minnesota 1 and Buffalo 2 because the same thing. Buffalo went through a 17-year playoff drought. Minnesota's had playoff seasons. They've had these 13-win seasons with wildly different organizations and teams a part of it. And they don't even have a Super Bowl appearance to show for it since 76 or whenever that was. 803-0550, the number to call. Had a little bit of fun there. We'll get to your calls after a quick timeout. Zach Jones, Josh Mitten here, the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Josh Mitten hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio hopefully will be joining with us at 11:30. We're still waiting on what day Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott will be speaking with the media. It's got to be some point this week, Josh, right?
I think it was it's anticipated today, maybe. Maybe tomorrow.
We'll find out.
It's going to be today or tomorrow. It's got
to
be.
Yeah. But while we're waiting, let's get connected to our fans. Brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We start off the morning here with Dan on the line. Dan, how are we doing?
Doing well. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
Doing good.
Hey, I got a thought that's going to keep me hopeful throughout this off season.
There we go.
And that is what's going on out west with the Chargers, Broncos, Raiders. You know, they all now have much improved coaches and programs, and I think Denver's going to be give Kansas City some trouble, as will the Chargers. And you put Pete Carroll into Las Vegas, they'll be pesky. So here's my dream: is that Kansas City next year, maybe they won't win the division and have to go route of wild card, which is nice to think about. And, if it takes a little while for Vrabel to turn around the Patriots and, Miami stays a mess and the Jets do their thing, it looks like it could be set up well.
Dan, I like where your head's at, man. Yeah, thanks for the call, man. I like where your head's at. This is a thing when you always look at the Patriots dynasty and why it was able to, essentially become two dynasties. Trista Crick joined Children of the Bulldog yesterday, and that's kind of how she talked about it, where it's not one. There were periods there. The early 2000s one, then the late 2010s one.
Mm-hmm.
They were different. But they were able to have that sustained success because, the AFC East was garbage. You had fleeting moments where Chad Pennington was good with Miami. We've already mentioned the Rex Ryan, Mark Sanchez, Jets teams. The Bills never really were much of a factor until the end, where
right.
Josh Allen had arrived and stuff like that, or even the 2017 playoff year. That's a good point on the AFC West, where now they all have really good coaches who have shown they have NFL success, and now two of them, Denver and the Chargers, clearly have their quarterbacks. They both made the playoffs this year. And I'd argue for both of them, it was not a year ahead of schedule, but very clear needs. And there were very clear needs that I think they'll be able to get a hold of this year moving forward. And it's not even necessarily for me the Chiefs losing the division. That could absolutely happen, sure. It's more the idea of they've got to deal with that. Baltimore's got to deal with the entirety of the AFC North. Mainly Cincinnati and Pittsburgh will always be it's just a pain.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they're not ultimately good by the end of the year, they're going to be a pain. You know
right,
that.
Right.
And then for right now, the AFC East feels like it's in a window where the Jets could be going into a full rebuild with Aaron Glenn and kind of restarting the culture there. Miami looks like they're going to be soon getting rid of Mike McDaniels and starting over potentially completely there.
I mean, they're just it feels dead in the water.
And then we'll see about the Patriots. We've already mentioned, their draft last year outside of May was not good. I like Vrabel a lot. They have a ton of cap space. That doesn't mean immediate success.
Right. But it does mean that you have, it looks like they have the quarterback. It looks like they have the coach, potentially. And obviously, Josh McDaniels has had no success as a head coach elsewhere. Mm-hmm. But as a coordinator in
he's been great.
He's been awesome. But now you're going to see him without Belichick for the first time. So there is, potential there. But even then, it's 2-3 years at least down the road.
Yep, where the Bills now have kind of gone through their transition year into a more sustained, this is the team we're going to have. We've already mentioned it. Outside of, I think, maybe a few free agent pieces, maybe a big trade, and then the draft picks, I think it's going to be, for the most part, the similar roster without, not saying they're not going to tweak things. They need a boundary wide receiver. Mm-hmm. They need help at the edge. They need help on the defensive line.
They need help on the secondary.
Michael tweets in here, too, when we were talking about the draft, thoughts on Derek Harmon, the defensive tackle out of Oregon in the first, Jack Sawyer, the edge rusher or outside linebacker out of Ohio State, and then a secondary receiver from there. I'm sick and tired of having a non-existent pass rush. And, brother, let me tell you, that's everybody. I'm right mm-hmm. there with you, man. There's too many times. And a lot of it, I'm listening to the broadcast over the radio with Chris Brown and Eric Wood. I kind of get a prelude to what's going to happen. The amount of times I've just heard no pressure or you know, tons of time. It's even yeah. even on
tons of time is the one that kind of always gets me. I'm like, ugh.
Even on blitzes too, you'll hear a ran and they picked up the blitz, and it's like, oh my gosh, like come on, like let's go. And I know there were good pressure rates. I think Greg Rousseau was top 15 in pressure rates. Mm-hmm.
Vaughn was yeah. even getting pressures.
But it never felt like it. They just don't have enough difference makers on the defense. I have no yeah. idea if Jack Sawyer's a great player at Ohio State. I know he ruined Texas this season, so lovely, great.
Imagine he's on the Bills and he does wonders for the next year. How would you feel?
I'll forget about it. Arch Manning's quarterback of Texas. We're good. We're fine. Ryan Wingo's a wide receiver. He's going to be great. Haven't even touched the transportal yet. It's going to be fine. But Derek Harmon, specifically, defensive tackle out of Oregon. I've seen his name a lot connected, just not even with the Bills, late first-round guys. And this defensive tackle class seems to be the best it's been in years at that position. Another guy I've really liked, Walter Nolan out of Ole Miss, is someone I've also kind of started to look at. And then if you want edge rushers as well, some of these other guys I've started to kind of pick up on, mainly due to that, their Senior Bowl. Mike Green out of Marshall led the FBS in sacks 17. Very quick riser this year. He was kind of a non-factor to start this year, transfer from Virginia, and then just consensus All-American, the Sun Belt Player of the Year, the whole thing. And then another one, James Pierce, the edge rusher out of Tennessee. Don't really know where he's going to fall, though. He seems to be like that SEC-type athlete where he scares the hell out of you. Don't know necessarily, though, if he's going to be like a top 15 or if he's a first or just an overall first-round pick. We'll see how that develops. But the Senior Bowl practices continue today and tomorrow with the game on Saturday. Draft season, it comes on you real fast, especially when you're a good team. 803-0550, the number to call if you'd like to join the show. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.